a one-of-a-kind blend of art, nature, and conservation. The Underwater Museum is a dazzling photographic tour through the under-ocean sculpture parks of artist Jason DeCaries Taylor. Taylor casts life-size statues from a special type of cement that facilitates reef growth and sinks them to the ocean floor in the Caribbean Sea and the Gulf of Mexico. There, over time, the sculptures attract corals, algae, and a diverse variety of fish, evolving into beautiful and surreal installations that grow and change with their environment. The new book, The Underwater Museum, features nearly 100 underwater photographs of Taylor's sculptures, while informative text explains the artist's process, the science behind this living art, and how these sculpture parks protect coastlines and provide a home for vulnerable marine life. It is a great pleasure to welcome artist Jason DeCaries Taylor to the program. Thank you very much for being with us. I appreciate it.
No, thank you very much for asking me to come along.
It is a delight to have you. The obvious question, of course, is how do you get started in doing something like this?
Yes, I suppose it is a little bit of a different career path. I actually started around 10 years ago. I studied sculpture in London and specifically kind of land installations. And I think I sort of worked with the landscape and I kind of wanted them to sort of integrate themselves better and to almost have a dual function, that they were, you know, some form of conservation. And then from that notion, I started exploring different avenues and came across the idea of artificial reefs. And I started off in a small island in the Caribbean called Grenada, and started with a small sculpture park. And ever since, it's been evolving. And just recently, I've come back from Mexico, where I spent the last 4 years making this underwater museum. And to date, we have around 500 sculptures over there.
It is fascinating because there is the sculpture that you create above the ground and then what it becomes when you submerge it. And that idea of submersion is key, of course. And then it's out of your hands, right?
Very much so, yes. It's almost a kind of letting go process when I actually, you know, put the works under the water. You know, I spend a lot of time on land developing them. And then it's sort of just completely left a chance once it submerged.
And you are fascinated by that process. I mean, assuming that you create in a way that hopefully, as this goes on, you learn a little bit more about what grows and what happens, that has an input into what you're creating the next time around.
Oh, definitely. Yeah, it's a huge learning curve, and yeah, every single new piece that I'm developing has something that's drawn upon from the past, and we do a lot. You know, the materials are pH neutral. They're much stronger than conventional building materials. We actually place the sculptures downstream from natural reefs, so that the coral polyps, when they're spawning, will actually have a greater chance of making it to the sculptures. All sorts, they have special habitat spaces where creatures can take refuge, they can breed. So they're very much specialized for the marine environment.
You write in the introduction to the book that instead of leaving my mark on the environment with my work, the environment is leaving its mark on my work. And that's always been sort of a part of what you have done, to have your work, to leave it and allow it to change and grow.
Definitely. I mean, it's that whole sort of relationship of this, you know, we're always kind of looking for sort of static answers or, you know, definitive answers and everything. And I just like the idea that this body of artwork is actually about change and about evolution. And it kind of mirrors our own lives in a different way where, you know, each day is different and subject to different forces.
When you look at the photographic prints that are in this book, and we see this sculpture, some of it we see that it's very, very fresh, and some of it has algae and has been transformed in some way. And does it, for you, when you look at these pictures capture a moment in time and will not be the same the next time these are photographed, right?
Definitely. And that's something I learned from a very sort of early stage. And subsequently, I've really concentrated a lot of my efforts on the documentation. You know, a visit can vary from 1 hour to the next. And so I really sort of make sure that I have very specialist underwater camera systems. I have tripod systems, movie systems, and it even affects to some degree how I place the work. Sometimes I might think, you know, oh, the sunlight's excellent from that side, and or sometimes I do very detailed textures on the sculptures that will be lost in a week, but I do it for the photographic record.
You have in that photographic record in the book, you show how these sculptures are placed and the incredible amount of machinery and time that it takes to place these sculptures. And just talk a little bit about that process of going down so far and finding the right place for the work.
Yes, certainly the installation is definitely the most challenging part of the whole process. And I'm working with a sort of a difficult equation that the sculptures need to be as heavy and as large as possible underwater so they remain stable. But obviously, as I start to increase scale and weights, the land logistics then become very problematic. So it's trying to sort of balance that equation. But generally, we make them in sections and then install them underwater and actually connect them all together. So as a mass, they're very strong, but we can actually manage them on land.
Given the concerns, the environmental concerns, given that we're starting to, perhaps too late maybe, but given the concerns that we have about the environment and about our oceans, this has obviously been very much a concern of yours. And what challenges did you have to overcome to be able to place this work in the oceans and allow that to not only to have the work, but of course, inevitably, the visitors who are going to come to see the work not screw up what was there?
Yes, I mean, concerning the sort of largest project in Mexico, we had quite a long process of doing studies and taking field data to actually get the permissions to install the museum. There was an issue arising with the natural reefs there that it received so many visitors. I think 750,000 people a year actually go to the marine park. And they were having problems managing those numbers. They were finding that the reefs that are frequented that often were degrading. And so the idea was to try and control those numbers of visitors, and subsequently the underwater museums actually placed on a flat bed of sand away from them, and by drawing the tourists away, we're hoping to sort of give them some form of relief.
The actual substance is what? It's a type of cement, but what does it contain and not contain that makes it conducive to this artificial reef?
Firstly, it doesn't contain any metals, so cement construction has a reinforcement of steel. This is reinforced with completely inert material, so it has fiberglass strands and rebar, and it's also enriched with a type of silica that makes it much more stronger and resistant to salt corrosion, and the final sculptures are treated and washed so that the surface area is pH neutral.
When you think of what you put there and what you sculpt, in looking at the book and throughout your work, you do a lot with the human form. You do a lot with people and faces, and I'm curious as to how that came about. Sometimes there are very natural perhaps not for a reef, but natural settings where there will be a guy sitting in a couch watching television. But for the most part, there is a human component and sometimes a group of humans, a large group of humans that are part of your work. And how did that come about and ultimately fit into what you wanted to do?
I mean, I took a figurative approach for many reasons, really. Firstly, I'm very much interested in this idea of ourselves living in harmony or in symbiosis with nature. So I really like the metaphor of us living in this sort of amalgamated world. But secondly, I also needed to utilize forms that were very strong. You know, if I started off with a piece that was too abstract or an object that was too abstract, by the time the corals and the marine growth has actually started to affect it, it becomes completely unrecognizable. But what's really good about the human form is it's so sort of imprinted in our psyche. It's so sort of so easily recognizable, even a small part, that as it's changed and morphed by the environment, I still think we'll be able to recognize it in the future. And I'm also working in different places with different communities, and I need an approach that's global and understood internationally, if you see what I mean.
I do. In your sculptures, in the figurative form, the eyes are usually closed.
Yes, yeah, that's a part of the process. I'm a specialist light caster. So all the actual sculptures are based on real people that come to my studio, endure the process, which is around an hour of being pasted with plaster and dental solution. And then we go on with those to make a specialized silicone mold, and then we'll take the cement.
So, and then in some cases you will have fun with it where there's a character that actually has their head buried in the sand. So it is, you are having fun with the environment as well.
Yes, yeah. I mean, it's quite interesting. I've done many different pieces, and you know, some of the ones that I've slaved over for years to get right, I can achieve the same by doing something that's maybe a little bit more poignant. So no, I definitely have fun, and by changing an object that, or situation that's very sort of normal and run of the day on land, by putting it into this completely new environment, I think it brings out completely different messages and imagery.
Taking the old adage of beauty is in the eye of the beholder, when you take a face and it is a beautifully detailed face of an elderly face, perhaps with great creases and lines, and you put that into an ocean and you allow all of these creatures and life to grow on it, that some of those pictures can be, it's almost a defacing, and it can be, I guess someone could look at it ugly. I'm curious as to how you look at it sometimes, of knowing the beautiful detail in the faces, and then suddenly when this aquatic life has taken over, do you ever see it as anything but beautiful?
I certainly think that they're enhanced by their marine growth, and maybe this is a part where the photos don't do it justice. But when you actually see the work in real life, the intricacy of the marine life, you know, you have these amazing sponges, these red and purple and pink sponges, that the colors are so deep that, you know, I've never seen a paint that and it comes near to it. And they're so intricate with venous capillaries and inlets where they pump water through, and it's so the forms, the textures, the colors are really on a different level.
Well, the book of your work is called The Underwater Museum, The Submerged Sculptures of Jason DeCaries Taylor, with essays by Carlo McCormick and Helen Scales. Jason, thank you very much for sharing with us. A great pleasure to have you on our program.
No, thank you very much for inviting me along.
Thank you very much. Again, the name of the book is The Underwater Museum. It's published by Chronicle Books. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.